Blog Talk Radio.
Respect for the earth, respect for the water, respect for the creator, respect for life itself.
Revolution is in the air.
another edition of Indigenous Rights Movement Radio. We come here every Sunday and sometimes on Saturdays or whenever is necessary to bring you very important information about the things that are going on in the Indigenous community across Turtle Island. Before we start the show, I want to give my brother a little plug. Wambi Gleshka has got a little show like mine on Blog Talk Radio, and it's on Sunday at 1 p.m. Central, and it's Res King. So go to Blog Talk Radio Res King Sunday at 1 p.m. Central. You get some good traditional views and good traditional music, and I'm certain you'll enjoy his show. Today, we're going to be visiting with two people who are already on the line, and I'll unmute them here in a moment, and we'll be visiting about Oso Blanco. We've talked about him before. You know he's serving 80-plus years for bank robbery, which is an outlandish sentence, but that's one of the things we have found out in dealing with sentencing with our people. Our people usually get 3 to 4 times the sentence that somebody from the dominant society will get. We see that over and over and over again. And we're going to be talking about his case today and the ridiculous proportions of the sentencing he's been dealt. I want to read you something from Oso right now before we get started. And this is from Oso Blanco. Sometimes I feel the lonely pain and separation from my community and people. I'm locked down in a room, a cement cell, 23 hours, except twice a week or 3 days I get no recreation, 24 hours. I did not kill anyone, yet I was treated like a killer because I defended my life. They got on a mic and told reporters I was a dangerous criminal in New Mexico. They called me a junkie. They said I was a gang member, useless to the world. Now, I'm like a free wolf, chained to the floor like a sad dog, lonely in a cage being told, hey, wolf, that's your home for 80 years. This is insane. Who have I killed? Nobody. Who have I raped? Nobody. It's unjust. The cost, the price of not only a revolutionary fighter, but also the price of being a political prisoner. Oso Blanco. This is a man who stood up and fought for his people in the way that he saw fit, and he took action and he put his life on the line to help the people of Chiapas. And I have much respect for somebody who will stand up and put his life on his line to help the children, to help our indigenous children anywhere. When you put your life on the line, I have to have respect for that. So I'm going to bring on right now Velma Martinez. Velma is a spokesman and an activist and is in close contact with Oso all the time and has information to share on the case. And very shortly, she'll be introducing our next guest when she gets to a break and what she has to say. Velma, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Wambli.
How you doing?
Osiyo, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Wash day. If you would, I know you have got some a whole sheet of information from Oso this week with a total breakdown on how his case played out. Would you share that with our listeners, please?
It would be my pleasure, Wambli. And I would like to say that this is pretty, in my opinion, it's just my opinion, but it's pretty heart-wrenching what went down. Now, you know, I was pretty accurate when I spoke 2 weeks ago about what happened initially at the very first bust. What happened were the two detectives in plain clothes, let me just kind of go over that again, went over to his apartment while he was gone, and his wife, and it's kind of come to head now that his wife was kind of working with the feds, but that's a whole other story. We'll talk about that sometime in the future. But what happened was she let him in the house, and they were hiding in his bedroom. They were in plain clothes, and he came in through the back door, and his wife, 6 months pregnant, was trying to tell him, no, don't come in, and he wanted to know who these strange men were in his house, and they shot at him. So he wrestled one to the floor, I believe, and pulled his gun on them because they shot at him. And then he went around, he ran out the front door, and he heard a gunshot and his wife scream, and he threw his gun off, and he turned, and he went right back through the back door to see if his wife was okay. And these guys were gone, and he didn't know who these guys were, and his wife is telling him those were the feds, and he said, well, these are not the feds, because if they were the feds, they'd be suited up, and there'd be a whole lot more of them. Well, they were down the street suiting up after this, okay? And that's when they decided to get in their garb and hit him. Well, when he ended up trying to run, they sicked the dogs on him. And so then what happened was the news turned it into that he had actually shot at these two feds, when in fact in reality he had shot at two strange men who were hiding in his bedroom and shot at him. Okay, so from that point on, he writes points that he'd like to share. Okay, the bank robberies that they were there initially to investigate. Okay, he got convicted 5 years for that, okay? He got convicted 35 years for that of defending his life in his own home by two men that he did not know were police officers, okay? That's what the first conviction is for. The second conviction is when he escaped from the van. He got 5 more years for that, okay? This
for,
is when
for
he
the
was
escape
going...
itself?
For the escape itself, he got five more years.
Okay.
And this was when he was on his way to court for the 35-year plea they wanted him to make for that incident that I just spoke of. So when he broke out of the van and escaped, he was on the run for 3 months. He gets captured, and they shoot him in the back. And this is what I did not know. He got 35 more years for that because he got shot in the back. They claimed he had a Tech 9. When he got shot in the back, of course, he bled everywhere. The Tech 9 they presented in court had no blood and no fingerprints. It didn't have his fingerprints, and it didn't have any blood. So he got 35 more years for a gun that just mysteriously appeared in court. Okay. They didn't even bother planting it on him. They just presented it in court. And so basically we're talking about getting the 5 years for escape and the 5 years for bank robbery. He got 10 years for all that. He got 35 and 35. You do the math for defending his own life. Yeah,
wow.
For defending
and
his
he,
own
and
life.
And he got the 35 years for defending himself when he was shot in the back with a Tech 9 that wasn't at the scene that showed up at the trial.
Exactly. You got it,
Willie.
Really.
That's a very strange thing. I would never think that federal enforcement officers in this country would have any throwaway guns they could put down like that. It seems like they do it all the time.
Well, they have a lot of guns. That was our biggest mistake as the United States, is that we handed all our taxpayer dollars over to them. Not me, because I'm not proud of it, but I mean I haven't been a working class citizen for years. But the working class citizens out there, they really need to know. I really think it's important. They need to know this. It's like the number one thing they need to know is that if they have a family member who finally stands up to these feds, the feds have no, they have not a fighting, I mean, they have no fighting chance against the federal agents because they have all the guns. They are a billion-dollar industry.
Oh,
that
sure.
We can't, we are going to have a hard time with a revolution as it is, you know. If there
well,
is going
to
be one.
The revolution, first of all, doesn't need to be handled with guns. It needs to be handled with minds and with using the system against itself. That's one of the things we have to always work at
there
with this revolution is we know we can't. We know a violent revolution will never succeed in this country, and we don't want violence. We don't want violence committed against our people. That's what we're trying to stop is the flow of violence against all of our people. What we have to do is learn how to work their system against them, because it's their system we have to win in. We can't defend ourselves in our own system, but we can find ways to make them dance to their own music in their system. But it takes coordinated efforts. It takes holding their toes to the fire, and that's what we're going to be trying to do, and that's what you're trying to do.
Okay, and also his case is in two parts. The cases were 19 months apart when they went to trial, and his trial took 45 minutes. It was a 45-minute long, yeah. They decided in 45 minutes that he was guilty of these things. But he, because of the press, and I can't stress this enough, because the press and the way that, and I'm a journalist. I worked in television, you know, in 90, it was a long time ago, but it's just, television hasn't changed all that much when I watch the news. And we were told to report what the cops say, not because they're on the cops' side or because it's the easiest thing to do, because
sure.
because it's less resistance. It's not, there is no work, you know. And I mean,
well,
there's an argument.
That's the difference between somebody who is just filing a report and somebody who's doing investigative reporting. There's a difference.
Right. Exactly. And so when you're on television, you know, airtime, they taught us in journalism, airtime is the most precious thing in the world. But yet they teach us from newspaper. When I first started, you started a newspaper, and they tell you, okay, you took this story, a newspaper story, and we're going to teach you how to take that story and report it in 2 minutes. Okay, so if I have 2 minutes to report a story, tell me how I'm going to tell both sides of the story. That's, you know, you're not. You're going to report what the cops told you to report, and then the public, they hear that, and they believe it as the ultimate truth, the final truth, and then the person who's trying to fight the system, you know, who's trying to make a difference, they have absolutely no hope to win. So
he ends up
in prison.
What happens, too, is when our people go up against this system, our people don't have money to afford a good lawyer, so they end up having to take public defenders. Public defenders will 9 out of 10 times ask our people to cop a plea, and they'll be copping pleas for things that they didn't do, or copping a plea when they could have won a trial. And that's one of the other things that this system, this just us system, it's not a justice system, it's a just us system, and I promise you, we ain't us. They is us. They is the system. This system is set up to keep our people locked away. It's set up a whole new industry. The prison industry is a huge industry, and it is set up to lock our people away. If they can't kill us, they'll lock us away. And if they can't kill our leaders, they'll lock our leaders away. We've seen it time and time and time again. And that's what we have to understand is, they want us to shut up and sit down and go away. What they need to understand, and if there's any federal agents listening out there, listen up real close, dummies. We ain't going away. You hear me? We ain't going away. We're here.
Yep.
We're here.
Okay. Also, what I'd like to bring up, too, that he mentioned here, is that when he was in jail, okay, he was actually put in the emergency room twice after being beat by jail guards, once in Sandoval County and once in Bernalillo County, which is here in Albuquerque. He got beat up, and his lung collapsed, okay, again. So after a few days laying in his cell with the collapsed lung, he was then rushed to the ER at Arrowhead Hospital. He was held in California for 60 days. Then he was brought to the North State Supermax, that's at PNM, that's in Santa Fe, for the court arraignment. Then he was taken to USP Florence, Colorado, okay? He was not even sentenced yet, and he was being held in a U.S. penitentiary.
In a USP, and unsentenced in a USP.
Yes,
wow.
In a USP.
Wow.
As if it was a county jail. He was taken back and forth from Colorado for all the court hearings in New Mexico. And so that there you have it. They put him in a USP without a conviction, which I thought was unheard of. I mean, you know, that's just he was pretty much already.
It is unheard of. I didn't know that it happened. He should have been held in a county jail, or almost all county jails have a side for federal prisoners.
Right, we have one here. In fact,
yeah.
the old. Because they built a new county jail here, which is a joke, but the old county jail is where they have the federal, they hold the federal prisoners now here when they're
right.
transporting them. Yeah, but he, so pretty much, they, you know, they had a home for him before he was even convicted, if you ask
me.
I mean, they put him in a USP before he got convicted. Come on.
That is amazing. So do you have a breakdown on the total sentences, what each sentence was for, and the number of years?
Yeah, okay. 35 years was for the first gun charge, when he had the brawl inside the apartment when they were hiding in his apartment in plain clothes. Okay, that was like a gun enhancement charge or whatever, you know, a violent charge, okay? And they convicted him for that gun charge, 35 years. Then in a violent charge against probably on a police officer. You know, I can't specify. He didn't specify what it was. And then the 5 years for the bank robberies. And then 5 more years for the escape. And then 35 more for him getting shot in the back,
What we have is a brother being held, and we have 2 5-year sentences on bank robberies, 10 years. These are all running consecutively. So we have two 5 years, makes 10 years on bank robberies. And then
five on bank and 5 on escape.
On escape. And then we have 70 years on charges, once where he got shot in the back by an M16, I think. And then, amazingly, a Tech-9 showed up at court with no blood or fingerprint evidence on it after it was at a bloody scene. And the other time was when his home was invaded by unannounced, ununiformed people, and he tried to defend himself.
Yes.
So he's got 70 years he's serving for those two things. Once for getting shot in the back.
Yeah.
He's going to jail for 70 years for getting shot in the back. Now, how the heck is a man attacking you or a threat to you when you shoot him in the back? Now, this don't make any sense. This don't make any sense at all, and it's being kept too quiet, and it needs to be raised hell about. Shot in the back and get 70 years.
Yeah.
No blood on the weapon, no fingerprints on the weapon. It just shows up at court. This is amazing.
Yes. And the saddest thing about it is that we just recently discovered there were two people when they captured him, inside the trailer that actually had worked with the cops, and they didn't plan on capturing him. They planned on murdering him. I'm going to put it out there. It's the truth.
They had set it up in broadcasts that they had made on local radio stations by saying that he was armed and dangerous and a threat. They were setting him up for murder then. They were setting up their excuse to shoot him then. And shooting somebody in the back with a military weapon, if that isn't an attempt at murder, I don't know what is. You know, we had this happen at Jumping Bull. We had Joe Stunts killed at Jumping Bull. Nobody's ever been charged with that murder of Joe Stunts. And they tried to kill Oso. They tried to murder him. They set him up to murder him.
Both times. Because, I mean, why else would you be hiding in a bedroom? Why would you be hiding in a bedroom as a federal agent in plain clothes with guns and shooting at someone in their home if you didn't want to kill him and make it not out in public? I mean, they wanted a clean shot at him, because I believe personally it has to be from their standpoint and from how the feds think, because they have to think they're right. Okay, they passionately believe in whatever they believe in. So whatever they believe, they think they were doing good for whatever. And so they were thinking in their mind that they needed this guy dead. And why would they need him dead? Because of his helping with supplies to people in a foreign country. You know, it all makes connections.
He was helping children. He was helping children in Chiapas. That is certainly something you deserve to be shot in the back for. Yeah, I think they have their minds made up on what they're going to do. I think they have their minds made up that they're going to do as they will, because they can get by with it, because they think nobody cares. And what they're going to start finding out, there's a bunch of people who care, and we're going to start getting noisier and noisier. And these two things, with these two 35-year sentences, where he was basically set up to be murdered, this is outlandish. I understand his lawyer is looking now at some possible reviews of the case. Is that correct?
It's my understanding. I don't want to throw it out there because I don't want to sabotage it. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's my understanding that his attorney is looking into possible taking different angles that no one's really ever thought of. I'm not real sure. So I'm not real sure yet. But when I do, when it comes to light, we'll talk about it in the future.
I want to bring our next guest on here.
Okay.
And I would like you to introduce our next guest, please.
Okay. Well, I'm going to let him introduce himself so I can get his name right when I hear him. Hi, Sinapu.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah. My name is Sinapu, and I'm with the Anarchist Black Cross Federation. We do support for political prisoners, and I'm one of the members that has been doing direct support for Okamoto.
Could you speak up a little louder? And what we'd like you to do is just give us your take on what's happened so far and what processes are that need to be going forward, please, my friend.
Well, from what I understand right now, also, I started doing support for also maybe around June of last year. And from what I've been finding out since then is just the type of treatment that he's been getting inside of the prisons. And let's see, because I've been hearing a lot about what Velma has been saying, and she has already covered a lot of the background on also Blanco, so I don't know if there's anything more specific that you would like for me to answer.
Well, if you could tell us Velma hasn't gone over the treatment in the prison this show, could you give us a rundown on what you understand the prison treatment has been like?
Well, I know that they've been doing things that would amount to what is considered torture. They have done such things as putting him in, like, they've been chaining him up from his wrist to his ankles, and they've left him like that for days. And I know that at one point, he even, they cut off so much circulation that I think it was on his right foot he lost some feeling for, I don't know how long. I'm actually not even sure if he ever fully regained his feeling. And also, he said that his hands swelled up real bad because of being chained up for a few days.
Yep.
Do you recall the incident where he and his cellmate were shot with pepper bullets? Do you recall that?
Yeah, I remember him writing me about that incident, and I think it was not too long after that we had set up a phone calling campaign to basically let the prison know that there was people from all over the country who knew about the treatment that was going on with Osolanco and his cellmate.
It's that kind of treatment, the chaining somebody. It's hard to figure why somebody needs to be chained in their cell when they're locked in a cell. And I think he's in the side of Lewisburg, which is basically a max, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a maximum security prison.
Yeah.
Sinapu, talk about the UNHRC findings that you sent on your Facebook. Talk about, please, if you will, about how the differences, significant differences between the convictions that left will serve as opposed to right, meaning more than likely, I guess, white, right convictions, and then you have your left, like also, and talk about how we found that very, very relative to Byron's case.
Yeah. Well, like there's one case of a white supremacist who received, this was in 1997, received a 3-year sentence for a plot to
You're cutting out. Is he cutting out to you?
Yeah. Could you possibly turn your head or get closer to the phone, because we're losing you here.
Okay. Hold on. Are Are you able to hear me better?
That's a lot better.
Okay. Well, yeah, in 1981, an anti-abortion activist was responsible for torching 7 family planning clinics, and he ended up doing like over $1 million in damages and received under 7 years in prison. And then there was a Klansman who was sentenced for 12 years for bombing a car of a white woman who was dating a black man. And that bombing ended up killing a two-year-old child and injuring her father.
Okay. Yep.
Well, that's what we find over and over again, is that our people of color, our people receive sentences that are 2 and 3 and sometimes 4 times as much as people of the dominant society receive for similar or even worse crimes. And that again, it just speaks of pure racism in our federal and state court systems. Now, we see it all the time. The thing is, I wonder how we go about solving this, because it has to be stopped, because we see people in jail for 10 and 20 and 30 years for things that they should maybe sit in jail for 2 years, but they're in there like that because they are a Hispanic or Black American or Indian, and they don't have the proper attorneys to fight for them. And I think that's one of the big problems, is our people don't have access to good defense. Are you seeing that?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's real clear. I mean, even within, you could even say just within the activist community, we don't even have the resources to defend ourselves, and we're the ones that are supposed to be going out there to fight.
Right.
And when we end up getting arrested and having to go to court, we end up getting, you know, public defenders as well. So, that's a real big disadvantage, because then, I mean, what options do you really have?
Yep, well, you're right.
You don't, and that's the disadvantage that our people work with, whether it be an activist taking action that puts him in jail or puts her in jail, and sometimes, you know, activists go to jail. You know, I've always had the firm belief that you can break the law and not have done anything humanly wrong. And I've seen people go to jail just for simple not move along orders. There was a woman out here where I am who went to jail. They stopped her. She didn't have her seatbelt on. She had her 3 children in the car. They took her children and they put her in jail for not having a seatbelt on. That is what being of color in this country can do to you, and what we need to understand it. It's not getting better, it's getting worse. And we can see this with what's happened in Arizona in the last 10 to 12 days with that law they've come up with, where they can stop and search anybody and lock them up basically just because of their skin color. That's the probable cause they have to have. Is this person white? If they're cool. If they're not white, you can stop them and lock them up and make them produce a birth certificate. I don't carry my birth certificate with me. I know very few people that do. But because of skin color, our people are being singled out, and that's a racist law. And what's happening is this country is showing itself more and more every day to be a very racist country. It's been hidden under the covers for quite a while, but it really seems to be rising up now. And we need to understand that if we don't take care of ourselves and our brothers and sisters, we need to understand this country is going to bury us if they get a chance. And we have to stand up and fight this crap.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And Byron is, he, you know, it was unfortunate. All the incidents that led to this death sentence, as you call it, of
basically,
80 years.
Yes, 80 years is a death sentence.
And I think, you know, well, if it's sad, but what are we going to do about it now? You know, and so what I'd like everyone to know, and I, forgive me for repeating myself, but I'd like everyone to know to visit either the Albuquerque Jericho website, Visit Oso Blanco's website, www.osoblanco.org. Get on Facebook. Let's do some petitioning. He only had 127, I think, when Paulette Dautier and I, when we checked it out about 4 days ago, he only had 127, come on, signatures. I know he's got more friends than that who write him. So let's get on there. Let's at least sign the petition. If we don't want to do anything proactive, we could at least get on the internet and sign that petition. We have got his beautiful, gorgeous paintings for sale on postcards. Anybody interested in that can visit his website and find the information to order them. His paintings are gorgeous. He actually did them when he was in a better state in Leavenworth before they did all this crap to him.
That's when he was with Leonard.
Huh?
He was in Leavenworth with Leonard.
He was with Leonard Peltier. He was with Bob Manning. He was with Coyote. He was with quite a few political prisoners, and they ripped that out from under them and started transporting all of them to different places. Now Leonard Peltier is with Byron in Lewisburg, but not with Byron because Byron's in the hole still, and Leonard, I believe, is still in population. Thank God,
but,
you know.
He is,
thank God that.
Let me tell you how the system works with our native activists, with political prisoners. Leonard filed a petition, an appeal, while he was in Leavenworth. That was a very long time ago.
Right.
Very long time ago. It was denied 1 year ago last month. That's how long it takes them to deal with our people. 1 year ago last month, that petition for an appeal was denied. And how long has it been since Leonard's been out of Leavenworth? My goodness. That's how they deal with our people. We're not important. And you're right. We need to get that petition signed by as many people as we can. And, you know, it's always available on the Internet. We put it out daily. Several of us do. And I know a lot of people see it, and they don't realize that there is a petition attached. So I ask you, when you see it, click it, go sign that petition. Doesn't take you just a second. We also need to be able to start building up support on the Internet, because the Internet is a very, very powerful tool. January of last year, when Leonard got beat up at Canaan, I think, it was January, we were able to, but because of the Internet, put almost 600 phone calls into that prison warden in less than 12 hours and had Leonard transferred in 3 days. And that was from Internet work. And so the Internet is powerful. It is a new way of communicating with people. It reaches all the way around the world. And what we have to do is start developing it for OSO. So when emergencies arise, like it did with the pepper spray, the pepper shots back before the first of the year, we can one more time burn up their telephones and say he's not alone. He has people who care, and we're watching, and we're going to pay attention, and you better start doing right. But we also need to be thinking of practical ways that we can change his situation. And in changing his situation, that means trying to get a sentence reduction, trying to get a transfer. I know he has to go through programs to get released into general population. He has to go through certain programs. Hopefully he will do those programs. They're to his benefit to do it. And I know sometimes when the man tells you you need to do this to achieve this, I know I've been in the position where I would say, well, stick it up where the sun don't shine. I hope he does those, and I'll be writing him and encouraging him to go through these programs so he shows that he is cooperating to the best he can in his situation. Because one thing we have to understand with a political prisoner, you need to be doing what is asked of you to show that you're not fighting the prison system, that you're fighting for freedom. And that's one thing that hopefully will change as time goes on, as this campaign for him matures into a campaign that can actually do some effect. But the thing about getting me transferred, we can't ask for a transfer till he applies for the transfer himself. It'll do no good. He has to put the application in, and then he can't do that until a certain time frame is passed after he has completed programs, as I understand it. Is that correct?
I believe you're right, and what I'd like everyone to do, I'd like to encourage them to write him, to ask him to consider that seriously, or we're going to be barking up a tree that ain't there. You know, that's just, it's just not going to be able, we can't do it if he doesn't do his part, you know. Which, I mean, it depends on what they're asking him to do. I mean, if they're asking him to jump through hoops, that's not very fair. But if it's a few programs and he can hold his breath and get through them, then we can justifiably, I mean, we can just straight out look them in the eye and say, look, he did his part, you know, why aren't you guys moving on yours? Otherwise, we're going to be in a hamster wheel, and we don't need that.
As I understand it, these programs concern substance abuse and anger management, things like that. And hopefully he'll get these programs completed, and that'll make a big difference in his ability to move forward, our ability to help him as he moves forward, at least to get him transferred out close to family, because right now the situation he's in, as we discussed last time we were on, he's not even allowed to see his own mother.
No, not at all. No, not at all. In fact, he can't even call his own mother.
He can't even talk to his own mother. Yeah.
And cannot. And she hasn't talked to him in 2 years.
That to me is just purely indicative of a political prisoner. Isolate the prisoner from the family, and there you have a political prisoner. I think I've got Paulette on the phone here. Let me see if she's here. Paulette, are you there? Paulette?
No. Hello?
Who's
this? Is this Wombly?
Yes, it is.
That's Mother Melody. Hi, Mother Melody.
Hi.
Oh, you're Oso's mother.
Wombly?
Yes.
Yeah, I am Oso's mother, and I have been listening this whole time, and I just want to say a few things.
Sure.
Like how many times Shane has been shot by the cops in Albuquerque. How many beatings he has taken. They handcuffed him and turned the dogs loose on him one night. He had 71 1-inch deep bites in his legs.
Wow.
They have shot him in the groin, damn near killed him, beating him, and then taken him to the hospital. And this has been going on for several years. And then through different times of getting in trouble or getting in trouble as they say that he's in trouble, I mean, the Albuquerque Police Department, the FBI and U.S. Marshals can make constant problems in people's lives in Albuquerque, for sure. And I'm sure that they can everywhere else.
Yes, ma'am.
If they decide, you know, they really want to run a person down, they do it. And I have watched my son take more hell, more beatings, more bullets than any person I have ever known, and he has survived it. In Leavenworth, he was beaten. He was beaten on the way from Sandoval County to Santa Fe County. That was a federal move. That was after 98 arrest, when the police officers were inside the house over there in his wife's house, and then, you know, there the people that were shooting in that event was the FBI. They actually were in there. They were hiding in the bedroom. They're the ones that took the shot. and that bullet went through Leticia's hair, sheared off her hair. She was actually 8 months pregnant with their child when that went on. There is really no stopping when they want to do something, when the federal government wants to do something, when they want to wipe a person out.
And they have the power to do it, and they have the court system behind them to back them up when they do it.
Oh, well, yeah, they can lie and the other one will testify to it. So I do know that very well. I mean, I've sit on enough of these trials through time.
Yeah, we've seen it with other indigenous prisoners that one FBI agent will get up and testify to one thing, and the next agent will get up and testify to something else. And you know one of them lied, but the judge doesn't care because they're FBI, and the lie that they want to believe is the lie they choose to believe. It happens consistently. We've seen it with the case of Leonard Peltier, where lies were told about him, documented lies, and the court accepted them because it came from federal agents. There's a law that my friend Ben Carnes is aware of, and I can't think the name of the law off the top of my head, but it says a law enforcement officer can lie under testimony if his intent is good. And to me, that means if his intent is to get a conviction. And that's what we need to be aware of. They're not after justice in this country. They're after, when they put their eyes on somebody and they decide to get them, they're out to get them, and they're going to do it. Is it true it's been 2 years since you've talked to your son?
No, it's been four.
4 years.
2 years since I've talked to my son,
yeah.
And it was like momentary.
Yeah.
Mom, I have 1 second. You know, I mean, that, you know, and I haven't seen him since 95, 96.
You haven't seen your boys?
Leavenworth. No, right now they've had me completely put off. I have my papers to go in and see him, but they won't let me visit him. They say no visits, no telephone calls, no breathing, no buying anything. They cut everything that they can of Shane's on a constant basis also. And Shane, by the way, is his given name.
Right.
But they disallow him spending of his own money that I send into him every month, so that he has money to buy whatever he needs, you know, toiletries and et cetera.
Right.
I mean, you live in a prison basically like you do on the outside, except you're locked in a cage. You're treated like an animal, and they will make your life an intolerable hell from sunup to sundown, the guards do. And they'll stand there and they'll lie right straight to your face. I do call the prison randomly and talk to his counselor in his hall just to ask questions, see how much they're going to lie to me, right?
Yeah.
With Shane and the bank robberies and the things that have happened, I will tell you that the night that they were out there in the trailer park, Shane had no gun in his hand. They told him to get down on his knees. They said he was in the kill zone to shoot. His hands were in the air, and they took the shot.
He was on his knees, with
his
hands
in
the air, with his back to them.
Right, so it popped all the way around. Yes. There was everything. There was FBI. There was marshals. There was Albuquerque police. There was
He was on his knees.
He was on his knees.
Hands in the air.
Yes, his hands in the air, saying, "Don't shoot. I don't have a weapon."
Wow.
And they took the shot. they said, the Albuquerque police officers said, he's in the kill zone, take the shot.
What did they mean by kill zone?
Well, that was asked in court in that first hearing. But Shane wanted a trial for one time in his life. He wanted a trial, which was the biggest waste of everybody's moments. But, I mean, I think the jury slept. They went out to lunch, came back with a verdict of guilty. The police officers really couldn't explain themselves. They just kept saying, well, it was one of our sayings, you know, like when, you know, secret sayings or whenever they're doing something, you know, so nobody else knows what they're doing. They're liars. I have watched them try to kill my son for a lot of years. And I mean, his actually John, his own dad, he really doesn't come and get involved in anything.
What do you? We have a lot of people listening all over the world right now.
Yes.
We have people listening. Let me go down here. We have people from Norway.
Yay!
Germany. We have somebody.
Welcome.
Dubai.
Wow.
We have another Germany. We have another Norway. People from all over the world are listening right now. What would you like for these people listening? What can they do to help yourself?
Okay. One thing for everybody that's listening. My son was mistreated by the law. He has a very unfair sentencing. He has a very unfair sentencing. The judge that I was in the court that day, and he goes, fine. And Shane was trying to handle his own thing because Mitchell, his attorney, was about the most worthless, paid-off piece of junk that ever happened.
A public defender.
And Shane was defending himself. And even the one of the defending attorneys stepped forward to help Shane with some words, and so that they would be correct. And I think he was doing a great job. He read how to defend himself. He read law books, you know, while he was in prison. And, I mean, I don't know what his privileges are right now, probably nothing. And actually, when he was in prison in Colorado on another set-up charge that actually he was set up to take that charge when he wasn't really even guilty of it. But that was a long time back. He was an admirable prisoner. He caused no problems. He was never in trouble. And they told him that he was an A number one prisoner. In that prison in Colorado, which is FCI, Florence, he had a band with some other guys in the prison, and they did very well. So from that point to this point and the other things that have gone on in Beaumont, in Coleman, that's another disaster. And then they took him and they changed him from one place to another. He was sent to a place, I don't know what the name of it was. It was just holding. And then he was sent to Talladega. And then he was taken out of Talladega and sent to another place. And then he was taken on up to Lewisburg, where he's at now. They always have things to say like, well, his life is in danger. That's why they want to put him in solitary confinement. And it's all a bunch of lies.
Yeah.
His life is in danger, probably from the staff that works there.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Well,
I mean, I have nothing good to say for the federal government or their federal prisons or the idiots that they train to work in there, because they don't, these people don't even have any more than maybe a high school education, and they get a little bit of power and, you know,
yeah,
they just go crazy with it.
Judge Black,
and let me finish this.
Go ahead.
Judge Black is the one who sentenced Shane to 80 years. It was very unfair. This is what he said to him. He says, "Oh, Shane, I am just so sick and tired of you being in my court. I'm going to give you 80 years. 80 years. Whatever they wrote down on a piece of paper to make it look all nice and dandy, you know, like 35 years for this and 14 for this and all this and that. I was there that day. I was there every time there was court."
And you heard the judge dispose of him like he was just a pain in the butt. Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, get out of my, just, you're nothing but a drug addict. Just get out of my damn court.
You know what I try
I'm
to tell
sick
people
of seeing
they
you here.
They need to understand these prison guards. They have to understand the mentality of somebody who gets up every day of their life and gets up and grins and shaves and puts on their uniform, and every day of their life, their whole purpose is to harass human beings who were caged. You have to understand that's the mentality of these people. If it was 40 years ago, they'd be working, or 50 years ago, 60 years ago, they'd be wearing an SS uniform. Right now, they're wearing the SS uniform here in America, because the American government is starting to act a whole lot like a fascist government. And we need to understand that, and also understand the mentality of these guards. They get up every day to harass human beings that are caged. We're running out of time now, my friend.
Just like Leonard Peltier and the rest of everybody who is indigenous, who is imprisoned, and a lot of them imprisoned for not even the real reason they should be in prison. They didn't even really do anything wrong, but they're imprisoned, and they get turned down every time they file for
any kind of appeal always gets turned down.
Right,
and they have excuses that are amazing and unbelievable, and the courts use their excuses, because political prisoners, people need to understand, they're not in prison for crimes. If they were in prison for crimes, the legal system would work well for them. They're in prison because the political system in this country wants them in prison. We got to go now. We got less than a minute left.
Okay.
Write for his
freedom.
All right. And
because, really, he does not deserve what he has. Goodbye, Wombly.
We understand that, and we'll be back on the air in 2 weeks from today and talk about this some more. And I thank all of you again for coming on and talking with us today.
Yes,
thank you,
sir.
Thank you very much. Well, friends, you've heard it. We've heard this over and over again. I'm going to ask you just to pay attention to what's going on with this as time goes forward. And if you feel in your heart that you can support, step in and lend support, because this man needs support. You've heard her. He was on his knees with his hands in the air, and he was shot in the back. He was shot in the back on his knees with his hands in the air. Keep that in your mind as we go forward trying to help Oso Blanco, Byron Shane Chubbuck.
Respect for the earth, respect for the water, respect for the Creator, respect for life itself.